On the main stage, please welcome Charlie Kirk.
Thank you. Hello, CPAC. It is great to be here. Special thanks to Matt Schlapp and Dan Schneider and the CPAC team for putting on another terrific event. It is an honor to be here with so many freedom fighters from all across the country. It seems they keep on finding ways to make this room get even bigger and bigger every single year. I visit college campuses, so you don't have to. You're welcome. I come with a warning and some insight. What I see on college campuses every single day is no different than what's happening in the Democrat primary right now, which is we have volunteered and sent our next generation to installations of indoctrination to teach the next generation to hate our country. And so I hear people all the time, they say, how on earth could a Bolshevik, could a breadline advocate, could a Marxist be leading the Democrat primary? And I say, have you visited a college campus at all in the last 20 years? And what I see every single day are students that are being taught that our country is racist and bigoted and homophobic and backwards, and they're being taught nothing but negatives about the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. Now, there's a lot of positives I'm here to share with you today. Turning Point USA is now on 2,000 high school and college campuses across the country. And as of today, our Students for Trump organization, our sister organization, has more affiliated chapters and groups than Students for Bernie Sanders. So, but I come here with a warning, because what I see on college campuses, when I see happening on universities across the country, I push back when people say, well, there's no way that Bernie Sanders could become president of the United States. No, he could win. And I want every conservative activist in this room to get your laughs out of the way and get the mockery out of the way and then get deathly serious, because we should not do what the left did in 2016 and dismiss an outsider populist candidate from thinking that person can't win the White House. Because as the great Andrew Breitbart taught us, politics flows downstream from culture. And if we're honest with ourselves, we've been losing culture the last 20 years. We've been losing in the media, we've been losing in Hollywood, we've been losing in academia. And all it's gonna take for the left to do is to boost turnout even higher on university campuses. They're now putting all sorts of different measures to try to get more and more left-wing students to embrace Marxism and to do same-day voting. And I'll tell you right now that if the left is successful, the college campuses are going to be the battleground for this election and for the next generation. And so here's what people say all the time, but Charlie, what can I do? College campuses, I don't really deal with it every single day. Well, here's the first thing for every single person in this room. Please, unless you went to Liberty University or Hillsdale, Liberty's a great college, stop giving money to your alma mater. Stop it. Cut them off. They do not need your money. These universities are indoctrinating the next generation around ideas of open borders and Marxism. And where Senator Sanders gets his base is a limitless supply of millions and millions of students that are entering our university system, and they're being turned into activists. And people say, well, where did this shift happen? How did this happen? Well, 30 years ago, we beat communism, and we brought down that Berlin Wall. But we beat communism in Europe, but then communism just came straight on our college campuses, and it came into our school boards. And that's the second thing. People say, Charlie, what can I do? Because I want CPAC to be a place of action. We're a place where people make decisions to do something. The left has continually and routinely taken over our school boards all across the country. And if every single conservative in this room got as involved in school board races as we do with national elections, our country would be in a much better place. With getting involved in what they're doing with our textbooks, getting involved what they're doing at the very elementary local level. And the third thing that people can do is they say, Does your kid actually need to go to four-year college? I'll tell you, going to some of the quote-unquote best schools in the country and visiting them, I would not send anyone that I care about to those schools unless you are willing to play Russian roulette with their values. We need to ask our high school seniors, hey, why are you going to college, not where are you going to college? We need more plumbers and welders, electricians and HVAC and policemen and firefighters and veterans. And we need far less people that are hyper-educated in the humanities and communications and psychology, but they know everything possible about why America's a flawed country, and it seems as if they're the ones that can't find, that are so unhappy and unsettled, and they're saddled with student loan debt. And so every single person in this room has to understand that higher education is the cartel of the colleges, is that they exist using our taxpayer funding, taking the minds and futures of our young people as a way to not just continually keep their power structure at a certain status quo, but also to create a future political base of left-wing Democrat activists. And so as conservatives, we have to ask ourselves the question, if we know for certain that they're indoctrinating the hearts and minds of the next generation, if we know for certain that 95% of professors in higher education are self-identified left-wingers, why is it that we continually send our most prized possession, the most prized possession in our country, is our young people? And we send them to these universities. We wonder, well, I wonder why Senator Bernie Sanders is doing so well. And I'm telling you right now, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to make sure that this president gets reelected. Everything I possibly can. However, when I go to these campuses, I see a preview of where America is heading. Whatever happens on college campuses will soon happen in the halls of Congress. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib and Ayanna Pressley and Ilhan Omar, they are a harbinger for things to come. They have bitter resentment for the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. The leading Democrat nominee has nicer things to say about literacy in Cuba than the heroic history of the United States of America. We have a dictator apologist that is the front runner of the Democrat Party, and that is only possible when you lose the cultural institutions. And so when I speak to conservatives, this is my very clearly, would the left continually send their kids to college if they ended up being conservatives? Of course not. They would reconsider it. In fact, they would probably say, we're not sending our kids here anymore. We're going to build our own institution. And that's exactly actually what they did. They took over our university system. They took over our education system at a fundamental level. And that's also why I'm a huge advocate for school choice. And the left cannot and will not be able to argue for school choice in our country. From, I believe that the more that we're able to challenge the true cartel, which is the National Education Association and the American Federation of Teacher Unions, and what they've done to the hearts and minds of the next generation, not allow specifically minority communities to be able to get higher, to get a higher access to education, is immoral and it is wrong. And the more that we challenge the teacher unions in this country, the more we're going to find success. But I'll tell you, as Senator Sanders or whomever they nominate, but it's looking increasingly likely like it's Senator Sanders, we're presented with an opportunity. Every election has a question of what exactly that election is about. This election is going to be a referendum on what is America? Is America a mediocre, socialist, welfare, Marxist country? Of course not. Are we a country of victims or are we a country of victors? Are we thankful that we live in America or are we angry that we live in America? And at the elemental level of why the left is doing what they're doing and why students are showing up in such high numbers for Senator Sanders, I get the question, well, Charlie, it doesn't make any sense. He's 78 years old. Why is he exciting young people so much? I say, he's exactly like the intro professor to How to Hate America 101. He speaks like that professor. He kind of looks like that professor. He's equally as angry as that professor. And he presents himself as the crusader against everything that is wrong and that is unjust in our society. It's the little guy against the big guy. When in reality, everything he stands for is the exact opposite. He stands to make government more powerful. He says that government is bought and paid for by the wealthy, the few, and the well-connected. Well, then why, Senator Sanders, would you want to make that very government more powerful? Why would you want to give more money to that government? Why would you want to give our guns to that government? Why would you want to give our health care to that government? Why would you want to give our education system that government? The same government that he says is wealthy, that is bought by the wealthy few and the well-connected and the lobbyist class, is the power structure that he's only going to make even more powerful if he is elected. And so we're presented a choice where we have been given a gift. I truly believe this from God when President Trump won that election in November of 2016. And we have the results to show for it. Lest us not forget Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, 170 circuit court judges, lowest ever black unemployment, Latino unemployment, Asian American unemployment, 10 million Americans off food stamps, energy independence, VA Accountability Act, right to try, prison reform, Qassam Soleimani is dead, al-Baghdadi is dead, the embassies in Jerusalem, Golan Heights are recognized. He spoke at the March for Life now twice. We've cut funding to Planned Parenthood. America is in a renaissance period. Once again, we've been given a gift from this administration and what they have done. However, the dichotomy has never been more clear that you have one side that wants to fundamentally transform one of the greatest blessings that God has given his children, and that is this country. And I do believe that if we do our job, we can. It shouldn't even be close, by the way. The fact that this election might even be close is an indictment of how far we have allowed our culture to go. But I'm telling you that where the future of whether we're going to be a free republic and a constitutional republic or whether we are going to be a failed socialist experiment, it's happening right now in high school and college campuses. Those are the battlegrounds of the hearts and minds of tomorrow. And so what we are doing every single day and what I know all of you are equally as passionate about, to fight for that next generation, to be able to convince them, is in my opinion, one of the most important endeavors in the entire country. And I'll tell you, this is exactly why Senator Sanders goes to college campus after college campus. But opposite of what the media might lead you to believe, President Donald Trump has empowered a resurgence of conservatism on college campuses across the country. The exact opposite of what the media might lead you to believe. I'm going to tell you why. The Republican Party of Mitt Romney, correct answer, by the way, correct. Every time his name is mentioned, you should respond that way. Because he lied to every single person in this room that knocked on doors for him, that made phone calls for him, that donated his campaign. Because we thought that he was going to be a crusader against the Marxist president that preceded Donald Trump. And now he asks and he begs for the endorsement of Donald Trump for the Senate in Utah. And then he goes and votes for that sham, unconstitutional impeachment. He embodies the very same political class that President Trump ran against. But the party of Mitt Romney was a party that did not fight. It was a party that wanted to preserve the ruling class. It was a party that did not give the next generation confidence and courage and conviction to stand for what is correct. And I can tell you, when students on college campuses wear those beautiful Make America Great Again hats, and I'll tell you, if you want to be a rebel on a college campus, wearing a Bernie Sanders shirt will get you thumbs up, high fives, and invites to all the coolest parties. You want to be a rebel, wear that hat on a college campus. You want to see what true rebellion is? Try walking around Brown, Yale, Princeton, Stanford, UCLA with that hat. But I'll tell you, finally, we have a president that understands the seven mountains of cultural influence. Finally, we have a president that understands the significance of standing, yes, I'm going to use a term, in solidarity with the grassroots activists of our country that see that college conservatives are under attack. And President Trump courageously signed a historic executive order to protect free speech on college campuses across the country. It was a year ago at CPAC he made that announcement. One of the most important executive orders that he has signed in his presidency. And so America has a choice. The left, we know exactly where they're going to go. However, as we look into this election and even into elections to come, we have to ask ourselves a question as a conservative movement. Are we going to revert back to the party of the status quo ruling class, of Mitt Romney, of open borders, making China continually get rich, and just being a technocratic governing ruling class? Or are we going to learn from what I call the MAGA doctrine? The MAGA doctrine, which is a doctrine of American renewal, revival, one that America is the greatest country in the history of the world, one of American sovereignty that believes in the working class, a conservative movement that believes in people that shower before work and after work, a conservative movement that is not afraid to challenge the tech companies, Hollywood, the media, not afraid to challenge the cartel of the colleges. That's a conservative movement that's going to represent the people, not the Washington, D.C. political ruling class. And that is a conservative movement that will win in November as we go up against socialism. So, in closing, every single one of you play an extraordinarily important role. The president is going to get attacked in ways that we cannot imagine from now till November. They will make up narratives, manufacture stories, and they're already beginning it in ways we could never imagine. They've already tried to impeach him. They spied on his campaign. Pathological resistance started 14 minutes after his inauguration. Culture will get this president reelected. Culture will win back our country. College campuses are the battleground for the hearts and minds for the next generation. I'm going to keep fighting on them from now to November. I know every single one of you are going to do what you can, and we will get this president reelected and take back this country. Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you.
The Democrats should be worried about Bernie. They should be deeply worried about Bernie because Bernie, over the weekend, he did an interview with 60 Minutes. And during this interview with 60 Minutes, he made absolutely clear that he is a full-on, full-fledged crazy person. I mean, he's a crazy person. So Bernie was asked about Medicare for All. He has specifically said over and over and over he doesn't know how much it's going to cost. He refuses to say how much it will cost. Finally, he admits how much it's going to cost. And his answer is it's going to cost $30 trillion. Okay, but this doesn't bother him at all because he has no plan to pay for it. After all, communism means never having to say you're sorry. I mean, really, it means never having to say how you're going to pay. It means it's a feature, not a bug. The fact that Bernie Sanders has no plan is a feature. It is not a bug. Hey, the fact that he has no plan means that his supporters get to fill in the plan with unicorn crap. You get to scrawl in within the colored lines with unicorn crap. That's the entire plan here. So here's Bernie Sanders finally explaining Medicare for All will cost $30 trillion. By the way, he is going to remove you from your health insurance. But then magically, he's somehow going to be able, without raising taxes dramatically on every single person in the United States, just by taxing wealthy people, apparently, according to Bernie Sanders, he's going to be able to pay for expanded services and make sure you have the same doctor and make sure you have the same care, which is patent lunacy. And whenever he cites Denmark, there's some things you should know about the Danish medical system. One, the tax rates in Denmark are insane. You're paying like 45% taxes if you're making above 60 grand a year. Second of all, you are able to buy supplemental private insurance in Denmark. Bernie's plan does not allow for supplemental private insurance. Third, the services that Bernie says he's going to provide are bigger than the services that Denmark provides. Fourth, Denmark is all run locally in terms of its municipalized healthcare. He wants a fully nationalized health insurance system. And Bernie's a nutcase, okay? And here's Bernie going on Medicare for All.
Do you have a price tag for all this?
We do. I mean, you know, and the price tag is, it will be substantially less than letting the current system go. I think it's about $30 trillion.
That's just for Medicare for All.
Just Medicare about. For All. Yes.
Do you have a price tag for all of these things?
No, I don't. We try to, no.
Okay, well, no, we don't. I don't. Are we going to pay for this? Who cares? Who cares? I'm going to pull it out of my ass. I'm going to take some Metamucil and pull the money directly from my ass. It'll be fine. No one cares. Who cares? Yeah, but that wasn't Bernie's biggest ridiculousness of the night. Then Bernie was asked about the fact that he's an old communist. Now, as I mentioned, he's not been shy about this. Okay, back when he was my age, okay, back in the 1970s, he was declaring he wanted nationalization of the banks, every major industry, the energy, like everything, everything. He was 35 years old when he was running with the Liberty Union Party in New Hampshire. Okay, so let's not pretend he wasn't a 17-year-old kid. He wasn't a 20-year-old. He wasn't a 25-year-old. He wasn't somebody who was getting his feet wet in politics. He was my age. Okay, and Bernie was doing this routine back in the 70s. Okay, so Bernie at the time, he has never found a communist regime he can't praise. So last night, Anderson Cooper asked him about the verboten, long-buried topic, according to NBC News, of the fact that he has supported every single communist regime he has ever come across. Like, seriously, the man has never run across a communist regime that he can't find warm words for. It's one thing to speak at AIPAC, the milquetoast pro-Israel organization that supports the only democracy in the Middle East. That's very bad, right? Bernie won't do that because Israel is very bad. Israel is racist. But when it comes to Cuba, I will tell you, Cuba has some very good things about it. So here was Bernie on national TV last night losing Florida.
We're very opposed to the authoritarian nature of Cuba. But, you know, it's unfair to simply say everything is bad. You know, when Fidel Castro came into office, you know what he did? He had a massive literacy program. Is that a bad thing? Even though Fidel Castro did it?
There's a lot of dissidents imprisoned in Cuba.
That's right. And we condemn that.
And we condemn that. But they were reading, weren't they? I mean, they were in prison. Sure, they were in prison. And sure, they were reading about how Castro was shooting their relatives. But they could read now. I mean, who could complain about that? They could read. Could they read before?
Okay, a couple of things about Bernie Sanders being a complete and total dumb. Okay, so a few things. One, the literacy rate in Cuba was about the same as the literacy rate in Costa Rica before Castro came along the scene. So by best available studies, somewhere between 60 and 80% of the Cuban population could read. And most of the studies put it at like 75, 76%. That was about the same as Costa Rica. You know what Costa Rica has now? And you know what they had very quickly? 100% literacy rate. You know what Costa Rica didn't do? Shoot its dissidents. Like, how many people does Bernie think it's okay to shoot so long as you get 100% literacy rate? Like, I have an easy way to establish 100% literacy, according to Bernie's logic, in any country. You just shoot everyone who can't read. It's great. 100% literacy rate. Like, what a complete and ridiculous, moral, pathetically disgusting human being this is. It's unbelievable. I mean, he's literally sitting there making the, well, at least Mussolini made the trains run on time. By the way, Mussolini didn't make the trains run on time. Castro didn't make the country of Cuba literate. This is nuts. It's nuts. But he did the same thing with the USSR throughout his career. Breadlines are not bad. Sure, you know, they may have had some gulags. Sure, there was a 5-year plan where everyone in Ukraine was killed and people were eating each other. And, you know, in China during the Great Leap Forward, when 40 million people died, that was kind of bad. But let's be real about this. China has an excellent record of poverty reduction. And the USSR, they have excellent breadlines and they have excellent cultural effects. Excellent. Excellent. We should have exchange programs. This is who you are nominating just because you hate Trump? You're out of your minds. You're out of your damn minds. The hell has gone wrong with you people? Seriously, you hate Trump so much that you're nominating a guy who would only be comfortable in the confines of Karl Marx and Frederick Engels? This is who you've decided to go with? Seriously? This is a great way to lose Florida, by the way. Remember that time when Florida was a battleground state? You know who lives in Florida? A lot of people who got on 1958 Chevys and then tried to float off an island to a coast of another country because they're trying to escape the regime that Bernie is praising right here. A lot of those people live in Florida. You know who else lives in Florida? A lot of elderly Jews who kind of like Israel. So well done, Democrats. You've basically just given away Florida. That's a genius move. That's a genius move. But this is Bernie all over, right? This is what Bernie is. Bernie is a nutcase. He is a nut. And you guys decided to go all in. You married the hooker, guys. Congratulations. You couldn't have just a one-night stand. You couldn't abandon your wife, have a one-night stand in Vegas. You decided, no, you're going to go bang the hooker and then marry her. So you bought the ticket. You take the ride. And don't be surprised when she cleans out your wallet in the morning. Don't be surprised when your bank account's gone the next day. Bernie is the socialist hooker in Vegas and you married her. Well done. Well done. I mean, he's saying this stuff now. He's saying it now. I love him. People like his long buried communist feelings. Did he ever bury them? Was there any point during his career where he buried them? Like any? We're going to get to more Bernie Sanders in just a second because it's just amazing. It's just amazing. You hate Trump so much that you think this. All right, fine. Your choice. Facts don't care about your feelings, and it's a fact that The Ben Shapiro Show is the largest conservative podcast in the nation. Be sure to hit the subscribe button to stay up to date on all of our content.
The idea is when socialism's not happening fast enough through the political system, you take it to the streets. To organize his campaign's socialist street soldiers, Bernie hired several architects of the Occupy Wall Street movement. They're now playing senior roles on his staff. Claire Sandberg is one of his national organizing directors, and Winnie Wong is a senior campaign advisor. Now, that's Winnie Wong along with Linda Sarsour in Claire Sanders' Facebook profile page. When Wong is not busy taking selfies with prominent anti-Semites, she gives speeches at Democratic Socialist of America conventions with titles like Revolution at the Crossroads, Igniting the Socialist Resistance Against Trump. After the failed Bernie campaign in 2016, Sandberg and Wong stayed very busy traveling around Europe to train leftist political groups like Podemos in Spain, the UK's Labour Party and the Left, a democratic socialist party in Germany that, get this, used to be the ruling Communist Party under a different name in the former East Germany. In 2017, Sandberg and Juan also went to Norway to train the leaders of the Rødt Party. Translated, Rødt means red. And yes, it's another Communist Party. So just let that sink in for a moment. Bernie Sanders, his national organizing director in charge of the entire army of street organizers, and one of his senior campaign advisors, are in high demand as trainers of communist parties in Europe. Really, it should be easy for Bernie's opponents in these debates. But it's not. Bernie's senior policy advisor is Heather Gottney. She is also an Occupy Wall Street veteran and a sociology professor at Fordham University. In 2011, she wrote an article for the Washington Post that basically is a how-to guide for organizing radical street movements like Occupy Wall Street. It's incredibly detailed with a ton of insider knowledge from that movement that was supposedly leaderless and just a spontaneous outcry from the people. Gottney is apparently regarded as one of the Occupy Wall Street leaders. And she's regarded by that, even by the people at the University of Tehran, which invited her to speak in Iran in 2013 at a conference called An American Awakening, where she returned to the when she returned to the U.S., she confirmed that, quote, "I felt my role there was to maintain my position as representing the movement," end quote. Gottney is apparently partial to authoritarian governments because during the Hugo Chavez reign in 2006, she traveled to Venezuela for the World Social Forum. Afterwards, she wrote that, quote, "Today's neoliberal capitalist system has become utterly incompatible with the requisites of democratic freedom as it stands. The U.S. representative political and economic institutions are not structured as representative bodies of any sort in any real sort of way." America, please hear me. You vote for just about anybody. I don't care who you vote for. But you have to understand, this is Bernie Sanders' senior policy advisor. She's only one of them. Just wait. They are not playing around. Let me show you the National Field Director. Now, this is Becca Rast. And also, let's throw in Field Director Nick Martin. They work under Claire Sandberg. And like the others I've mentioned so far, Rast and Martin were also veterans of Occupy Wall Street. They were in high school. They were high school pals. And they formed a chapter of the new Students for a Democratic Society. That's SDS. Remember? They started it in 2006 as a resurrection of the original SDS, the Marxist group from the 1960s that produced Bill Ayers, the riots in 68, and the Weather Underground. The Bernie campaign also attracts members of Antifa. It's only natural, since Antifa was also an integral part of Occupy Wall Street. Antifa is made up of self-admitted socialists, anarchists, and communists. They don't care about the Democratic Party's progressive agenda. They're done with it. They're following an entirely different playbook. And that makes for a perfect fit, really, with the Bernie campaign. Again, do not take my word for it.
Watch. There's some here. A lot of them are probably on the Bernie campaign. But there are some DSA, there's a DSA chapter here, so like some of the DSA folks are probably engaged. We've been looking for an action to like participate in, like in regards to like, oh, look at that action.
That's it.
But like in regards to like immigration and ICE, mm-hmm. We've been looking for something to pop off where we can pop right back off.
Well, I think, right. You know, you don't want to scare people off. So you kind of got to feel it out first before you get into the crazy stuff. But
what kind of crazy stuff? Tell me.
You know, we were talking about, you know, more extreme organizations and stuff like Antifa, you know, you're talking about the Yellow Vests and all that, but, you know, we're kind of keeping that in the back burner for right now.
For now. They don't want to scare people about having Antifa on board the Bernie campaign, so they're keeping it on the back burner for right now. How the media accuses conservatives of fear-mongering or exaggerating plots that aren't there, yet here are Bernie campaign staffers spilling the beans. The agenda is real. They are passionate about it. The key to understand what's happening here is that Bernie's team is working on far more than just winning the presidential election. They've been talking about a wider movement or the revolution. They even spell it out in one of their campaign commercial taglines. Watch.
Senator Bernard Sanders will be the next president of the United States of America. Thank you.
Watch. Make no mistake, they mean it. This revolution is about ending capitalism. This is the exact communist revolution that Lenin in 1919 and later Stalin were begging America to have. Bernie is simply the battering ram to get the communist boot inside of your doorway.
Here to set me straight about this is Donald Trump. Oh, I'm sorry. I confuse you with him because you're both tall and blonde and obnoxious sometimes and say rude things.
First in the hearts of the people.
How does the left lie about immigration?
Well, the original lie was the 1965 Immigration Act pushed by Teddy Kennedy, supported by Bobby Kennedy and Dean Rusk and the Washington Post, and all of them swore up and down this immigration law will not change the basic demographics of America. The same countries that have traditionally populated America will continue to populate it. The demographics will not change. That turned out to be a massive, enormous lie, but now if anyone calls them on it, it's racist.
Clearly the demographics change, but not that much.
Oh, yes, that much. From the beginning of America until 1970, the country was always about 80 to 90% white, 10 to 20% black. That's what America was.
And you want to keep it that way?
I
that
think
sounds
the American
racist.
People should have been, exactly, that's what they say now. I think the American people should have been asked about it. But no, they were lied to, and now if you say, hey, you guys lied to us, that's, the answer is, you're racist. Really what is happening is America is being transformed into Latin America, particularly Mexico. More than a third of all legal immigrants are from Mexico. At least 60, 70% of illegal immigrants are from Mexico. Can you ask the American people, hey, would you guys prefer to be living in Mexico? Let's change our country. No country in world history has transformed itself into another country like this, and it was done without checking with the American people, and in fact, directly, specifically, knowingly lying to the American people.
How many of you agree with her on this? A few. Okay.
They're embarrassed. They don't want to be called racists. That's the trick. Let's just change the population and then accuse anyone who disagrees with what we've done to the country, call them racist. But I noticed none of you immigrated to Mexico. So I'm thinking that a lot more of you agree with me than are claiming to right now for fear of being called racist. In fact, Mexican immigrants didn't stay there. They didn't immigrate to Honduras.
No, because we're a better
Pakistan.
Country.
They wanted to come to the country that is or was America. If this continues, it is not going to be America.
Why isn't it America if there are more people from Latin America and from Asia?
Because these are very, very different cultures. Very different cultures. What determines the least corrupt countries is number of years of British rule and Protestantism. If you were to ask Anne, I'd say you want a country run by either WASPs or Ashkenazi Jews, but I haven't done the studies the Harvard guys have done. Americans overwhelmingly say they want less immigration, not more.
And what's the problem? Switzerland, Australia, they have twice as many immigrants per capita as we have.
Switzerland, you have to be there three generations before you can become a citizen. I think that's a fine idea.
27% of the country is made up of immigrants. It's 13% in the United States.
I'm confident they are not taking more immigrants from Nigeria than England as America is.
Since you bring up Nigeria...
I don't believe the stat you're about to give.
That Nigerians are more likely to work than native-born Americans? Nigerians who come here?
Yeah, no.
Higher
allegedly
also
higher
from Ghana,
educated.
Twice.
No, I've gotten too many requests to contribute to the Nigerian prince or fill out a credit card to believe any
that's
of their
That's a scam.
Statistics.
That's different from actual
well, okay,
Nigerians coming here.
Where do you think this comes here? From? Where do you think this comes from? It's self-reports.
They are not twice as likely to get a college degree as
I don't
Americans.
Believe it. I do not believe it.
I think she's a lot smarter than presidential candidate Lindsey Graham. But when it comes to immigration, I think she's wrong and Graham is right.
I think most are hardworking people that come from poor and corrupt countries to make a better life.
They are, and that's a good thing.
So what? Good for them. Very admirable. Is it good for America?
On balance, I would say yes.
Well, that's the question that should be asked, not that they're hardworking or admirable people.
Not that you have all the answers, but what do you think? Are
this
they on balance
so
good for America?
This is so not a question to be polling people on.
Hands up. Yes? No?
Okay, now you're annoying me even more than the polls do. All we ever hear is diversity is strength, diversity is strength. We're a nation of immigrants. These are lies. You never get to hear the other side. Look, 70%, more than 70% of illegal immigrants are accepting government assistance.
That's not true.
It's absolutely true. So maybe before polling people, you should have the facts.
If they're not eligible for food
yes,
stamps.
Yes, they are. They're eligible for all kinds of government assistance. You're completely wrong.
For some, their children get educated. They get hospital emergency
and
room
I think
treatment.
You're wrong about food stamps, and they get health care. They often get housing
They don't get
assistance.
Welfare. They don't get Section 8 housing.
No, they don't
housing.
Get one form of welfare. People who are poor and coming from dysfunctional cultures, from corrupt cultures, who are used to being bossed around, are not going to be, working harder than Americans and less likely to accept government assistance. And they are driving down low-wage workers. Income inequality is through the roof. They aren't taking your job. They're probably not taking any of your jobs. But they are taking jobs of people at the bottom of the income ladder. And they're our fellow
Doing
Americans.
Doing jobs Americans often don't want to do.
They don't want to do them free. They don't want to do them for $3 an hour.
Or it's illegal to do it for $3.
No, I want to bring in more people to compete with you for your job. No, but that's not what the, that's not what happens. That's not our immigration policy. So you can be macho and say that, but that's not what's happening.
Fair criticism. But when you talk about the contribution, this is from the CBO. More immigrants would lower the deficits.
And that's nonsense.
They pay into the Social Security
no, they
system,
don't.
But they often don't take it out, especially if they're illegal.
Yes.
The National Research Council, the typical immigrant imposes a net fiscal cost of $3,000. That's what you're talking about. But the descendants of the immigrant have a positive contribution of $83,000.
No. This is absolutely ludicrous.
The National Research Council, they're smarter than you.
No, they aren't. They're liars. They're bigger liars.
But what about all the stuff we gain? I mean, Google, IKEA, YouTube, bicycles, blow dryers, basketball, football, shopping malls.
We used to get the creme de la creme. That isn't our immigration policy anymore. Now it's bring in cheap labor to drive down the poorest Americans' wages and block vote for the Democrats, which is working like a charm for both those groups. And the other ones you mentioned, these are the same groups that are mentioned over and over again. Okay, we got one from Russia, a few from Germany, and a few from Britain. If that's what we want, then let's get that. Let's not be bringing in a million immigrants from Mexico every year. Where is the Mexican Google?
How about the computer programmer from India?
Yeah, that turns out to be another scam, this H-1B visa. They aren't inventing some great companies. They aren't starting Netscape. What they're doing is standard computer programming work. The reason they are desirable.
That's useful. That's great.
No, what is useful is to the employer, they can't switch jobs. They are indentured servants, something this country got rid of 100 years ago.
I think we should let more people in legally and there'd be less sneaking in.
Well, but it depends who you're letting in.
People who want to work.
No. You can't play both ways here.
Already the rules are stacked.
No. When we're talking about how fabulous the immigrants are, suddenly I hear about Google and PayPal. But now when we're talking about admitting them, you want the guy to do your landscaping. Fine. Admit the ones who are going
to come in. You're saying things that Americans just don't say in polite company.
Well, yes, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Because the reason Americans are sensitive and your audience are such scaredy cats of being called racist, sorry, but you are,
Are you?
Is the reason we are sensitive to the race issue is because of how black Americans were treated. It's because of the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow, both by Democrats, I might add. Someone who has never set foot in this country, we don't owe anything to. Black Americans have a very specific history and rights and privileges in this country because of what they have been through. They can complain about racism.